to you today. So maybe let me first give a chance to introduce myself. So I'm actually currently in the course of finishing my PhD studies at the University of Innsbruck.
Sorry, your slide just went, your screen just went blank, your screen sharing. Did you do that on purpose? Okay, there we go.
Ah.
Okay, now
I went to full screen.
Now it's fine.
Yeah, it's good now. Yeah.
Maybe I opened Keynote. Maybe that's the problem.
Try it again.
Maybe I have a PDF version. I can put it on full screen.
No, you could do that. What he was saying was fine.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe we can keep this. Is it okay like this?
I'm okay with this.
Okay.
Okay.
Let's see.
I think just keep in mind you have some sort of trans-specific delay.
Okay, can you see this?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, I'm fine.
Okay, go ahead.
So I'm actually in the course of finishing my PhD with Andreas Leuchli at the University of Innsbruck. In Austria, but currently staying in the University of Tokyo in the group of Shinichi Toro for 6 months to learn some new stuff and have a new project together with him. So what I'm going to talk about you today is the research that I've been done in my PhD at the University of Innsbruck, and it's been concerned with showing the emergence of chiral spin liquids in frustrated magnetism. So what this is about, the chiral spin liquids is a new exotic kind of phase of matter people are very excited about. And for a long time it has not really been sure whether there's any realistic model that could stabilize such a phase. And what I've been doing is showing numerically that such phases can actually emerge in frustrated magnetism. But to start this talk with, I want to introduce what a chiral spin liquid is. And to do this, I actually want to start with something a bit different. So, namely the Hall effect. So just a quick reminder that everyone is on track. So the Hall effect is actually a very simple effect. So you have a conductor, you apply a current and a perpendicular magnetic field. Then what you measure is voltage perpendicular to both the current and the magnetic field. And the ratio between this voltage, called the Hall voltage, and the current is called the Hall coefficient or the Hall resistivity. And the classic Hall effect now tells you that this Hall coefficient is linear in the applied magnetic field B. So that's what you can see in this equation. Yeah? And yeah, here you have N is the number of charge carriers and E is the elementary electron charge. Huh? So now it gets more interesting. If you go to low temperatures, very thin two-dimensional conductors and high magnetic fields, what you will observe that this linear behavior of the classical Hall effect will get some plateaus at certain values of the Hall resistivity. No? And so these are somehow quantized by this formula here. So what you have is the Hall resistivity is quantized to be 1 over nu times h over e squared. So h is the Planck's constant, e squared is the electron charge, and nu is what is called the filling fraction that defines the plateau in the quantum Hall effect. So there's like filling fractions that are integer, 1, 2, 3, and so on. And there can also be filling fractions that are fractions, yeah? So like 1 over 3 or 2 over 5 or 1 over 5. And the difference between those two is actually, also the name. So the integers are called the integer quantum Hall effect, and the fractions are called the fractional quantum Hall effect. So these effects are actually turned out pure quantum mechanical effects. And what is especially interesting is the fractional quantum Hall effect. So the fractional quantum Hall effect has turned out to be emerging due to very strong interacting electrons in a 2D limit in very clean samples with high magnetic fields and very low temperatures. Laughlin proposed, so this is actually a complicated system. You have the strongly interacting electrons, which is a highly non-perturbative problem, and in a strong magnetic field. And it's very hard to solve analytically this problem. Yeah? So what Laughlin proposed was the following wave function you can see here. as describing the ground state of the system. And this was actually a very good guess. So this wave function is actually able to reproduce a lot of effects that can be observed in the experiment. And also it had some numerical success. So people checked, could compute numerically the ground state of this fractional quantum Hall system and compute overlaps with this Laplacian wave function. And it turned out that these overlaps are extremely high, up to 0.99. Yeah? And now the interesting thing about this Laplacian wave functions at different plateau is that we observe phase transitions between different Laplacian wave functions or fractional quantum Hall states without breaking any symmetry. Yeah? So there's a phase transition that cannot actually be described by Landau theory. So there's a whole new paradigm of phase transition going on. And what people realized is actually that quantum entanglement is the key ingredient in these phase transitions. And this leads us to some new kind of ordering called topological order in fractional quantum Hall effect. Yeah? So in theoretical understanding, we now think that actually in these systems, the ground state degeneracy depends on the topology of the surface the system lives on. So for example, the ground state degeneracy would be different on a torus, or in Austria we like the pretzels more. Yeah? So we don't have many donuts. So another fact is that the system has some quasi-particle excitations that have exotic anionic grading statistics. So if you interchange two particles, you will get an arbitrary phase, or you can even get more complicated transformation behavior. The system is in some sense long-range entanglement, so quantum entanglement becomes very important. And what is like really a key feature in the fractional quantum Hall effect is that you have open boundary conditions. You will have gapless excitations at the open boundaries. Yeah? So these are actually the excitations that can carry the Hall current. Now, this fractional quantum Hall effect is really a phenomenon that we can observe in the lab, in the experiment. Now, the question is whether there are any different physical systems exhibiting such phenomena, this topological order. And so to this question, I would say, to my knowledge, is the answer is not yet. But people do have good candidate systems for it. Yeah? And what people are often interested in trying to show that topologically ordered systems are emerging is frustrated magnetism. Yeah? The frustrated magnetism is a whole field of investigated materials. So the paradigmatic model in frustrated magnetism is actually the easing model in a triangle. So the anti-ferromagnetic easing model on a triangle. So spins try to align in opposite direction. So as you can see here on the upper right side, so two spins want to anti-align, so where does the third spin want to go? Yeah? So somehow local energy constraints cannot be minimized simultaneously. Yeah? And there's actually a lot of systems that are believed to have this kind of some kind of microscopic interaction that is frustrated. Yeah? So a very prominent one is, for example, this material herbertsmithite. This is a crystal you can actually find in nature. And so this is believed to have, like, this crystal is believed to have two-dimensional planes of copper atoms, and these somehow constitute the low energy degrees of freedom. And these are aligned in such a Kagome geometry. And so they are thought to be coupled by via something similar as the Heisenberg model that you can see here. Yeah? And yeah, people don't really understand up today what is the physics in this crystal. No? And another material is also some organic mud insulators, which you can see in the right. So it has some complicated name. But this is also a material where copper atoms are aligned in a two-dimensional triangular plane. And here also it appears that frustration seems to play a very prominent role. Yeah? Also, historically, some frustrated materials were interesting in the study of high-temperature superconductivity. So people believed if you somehow dope away a superconductor from half filling, that this might be an explanation for the superconductivity in high DC superconductors. And yeah, theoretically, we can analyze local frustrated spin models. So what they are, they're actually very simple to write down. But unfortunately, they're very hard to solve. Huh? And so this finally now brings me to telling you what a chiral spin liquid is. So a chiral spin liquid is a phase for a new state of spins. And it's actually, you translate the fractional quantum Hall effect physics into a spin wave function. Yeah? So this was proposed in 1987 by Kalmayr and Laughlin. And they just proposed to put a Laughlin wave function of the fractional quantum Hall effect to spins. So how does this work? You map, you consider, for example, the spin configuration on the right, and you would like to know the wave function coefficient for the spin configuration. Yeah? So what you do is you consider the up spins as hardcore bosons, and you forget about the rest. Yeah? So you forget about the down spins. And then you have hardcore bosons living on a lattice. And for this hardcore bosons, you write down the bosonic nu equals 1/2 Laughlin state. And this gives you the coefficient for this spin configuration. Yeah? So this set I are actually the complex coordinates in a two-dimensional plane. Yeah? And now you can investigate this wave function. And it has some very interesting properties. Yeah? So first of all, so this wave function does not break any lattice symmetries or rotational symmetries. Furthermore, it's also a spin singlet, which is kind of non-trivial to show. So actually, the spin rotational SU2 symmetry is unbroken. Yeah? So it's somehow a featureless spin liquid. Yeah? And but actually, there's not every single symmetry is unbroken. There are two symmetries that are broken. This time reversal symmetry and the parity symmetry. And that's where actually the name chiral spin liquid comes from. Yeah? So spin liquid is the name why, because it does not break this lattice and this U2 symmetry. And chiral comes from, okay, it does break this time reversal and parity symmetry. And for this time reversal and parity symmetry breaking, there's an order parameter called the scalar chirality. So this is an order parameter living on three spins, and it measures the volume spanned by three spins. So this will appear sometimes in the talk now, and yeah, let's just remember that. And but this somehow featureless spin liquid state, so the paramagnetic features of the state are not the interesting part. The interesting part is that actually this state is also similar to the Laughlin states of fractional quantum Hall effect, topologically ordered. So what you will have is you will have spin 1/2 excitations. These spin 1/2 called spinons. These spin-on excitations do have semionic statistics. So if I interchange two of these spinons, I will get the phase of pi over 2. I will have this two ground state degeneracy on the torus, and also, I will observe this effect of the chiral, gapless chiral edge mode. Yeah? So this state is very interesting. So it would be very nice if there is some realistic model realizing this state. And so what Kalmayr and Laughlin did, so they proposed this state to be the ground state of the triangular lattice Heisenberg antiferromagnet. And so they showed it has a low variational energy and it might be a good candidate. At this point, like 1987, the numerics was not so far evolved and people thought, yeah, it might be a good candidate. But actually, 7 years later, exact diagonalization studies could show that the ground state of this triangular lattice Heisenberg antiferromagnet is actually in the L order. Yeah? So this is what you can see here on the right. Yeah? So the spins line expression that the angle between two of them is always 120 degrees. No? So, okay, the chiral spin liquid is not realized in this triangular lattice Heisenberg antiferromagnet. So now the question,
can you hear?
Hello?
Can you hear me? Question? Yeah?
Ah, yeah. Please.
Can you elaborate a bit? So what's the signature in the ED that proved to the community that the ground state's Neil ordered?
Ah, okay. The ground state is Neil ordered. So there was this study by Bernieu et al. And they did like a tower of states analysis.
Okay.
So this.
That's what Tower yeah. States are, yeah.
Okay. Oh. So, yeah, now the question is there any model realizing this physics? Yeah? And this was actually a long search. And so it took until 2007 or 2013 until the first people realized that they can write down exactly solvable models where the chiral spin liquid is realized as a ground state. So that was done by these two papers, Schroeter et al. And Nielsen et al. But unfortunately, these models are very complicated. So they include long range, many spin interactions, and they are experimentally barely relevant. Yeah? So they most probably will never be realized as this in an experiment. Yeah? But there were also other approaches proposed by Messier et al. At the same time that actually simpler models could give rise to the chiral spin liquid. And what they proposed is the following model. This is the antiferromagnetic Heisenberg model living on the Kagome lattice. So on the same lattice that is, for example, realized in this Herbert Smithite crystals. And what you have Heisenberg interactions on the first nearest neighbor, on the second nearest neighbor, and the third nearest neighbor. So in the rest, we can always set this J1 to 1, and we can look at the phase diagram when we tune J2 and J3. Yeah? And so now what Bessier et al. Did, they considered the classical phase diagram, so classical Heisenberg spins, and elaborated the phase diagram. Yeah? So for positive J2 and J3, they found two phases. First of all, a magnetic ordering that is called Q equals 0 order. So it's actually translationally invariant if you translate it by one unit cell. And it's a coplanar structure, and it's somehow 120 degree in the L order.
That's the question.
Space is now also a classical order. It's a magnetic ordering with
question.
A 12-side unit cell.
Question?
Yeah.
Question. So is it important that J3 is only across the hexagon and... Not, I mean, there are other J3 interactions, so...
Yeah, that's true, yeah. So, I skipped this, yeah. So, yeah, but you're right, yeah. That's actually true, yeah.
So it's important mm-hmm. that you consider only this type of J3 interaction and exclude, if I understand correctly, other type of J3 interaction.
Yes, that's correct, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So actually, it was always somehow it's always studied if the J3 interaction is across the hexagons and not across two triangles. Yeah. Exactly. Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. So, and now what they proposed is that actually, on the critical line of the phase transition between these two classical states, we have this emerging chiral spin liquid. Wait a second, I'm sorry. So, you have this emergent chiral spin liquid. Yeah? And so they proposed this by computing variational energies of some model wave functions. So then, 2 years later, people studied this system using DMRG. So they studied this critical line where you have equal J2 and J3. And so this was works by Gong et al. And He et al. And using the DMRG studies, they could show conclusive evidence that indeed a chiral spin liquid is realized here. So this, I think, are very nice DMRG studies. So they computed a lot of interesting features. So they computed entanglement spectra. They computed modular matrices, which somehow described the braiding statistics of the anions. And it was a very, very, very good work, I think. Yeah. So this was in this J2, J1, J2, J3 model. But a further DMRG study showed that actually, in a Hamiltonian, where you just take this scalar chirality interaction, also a chiral spin liquid is realized. Yeah. And so what we did is we somehow confirmed this result with exactly realization and a variational wave function approach. So I want to talk about this, but so I want to describe what exactly we did there. But to explain this, I first want to introduce you to our newest results, which is yet another Hamiltonian that realizes the chiral spin liquid. namely Kairos spin liquids on the triangular lattice. So this is like our most recent proposal on this topic.
Before you go on, may I ask one more question? Sorry.
Yes.
So I mean, I don't know. So this type of chiral term in the Hamiltonian, is there any microscopic origin for this? I mean, somehow related to real materials, or you just assume that it's allowed by symmetry and just see what this term brings?
Okay, yeah, so this term is actually the first order perturbation theory. If you apply a magnetic field, you will get the Zeeman term and you will get this scalar chirality term. Yeah? So if you do the perturbation theory in the flux phi, t, and u, this term somehow is linear in the flux, quadratic in t, the hopping of the Hubbert model, and u divided by u over 3. Yeah, so it's just the next term in the perturbation expansion of the Heisenberg model. So it could actually be realized by magnetic fields or some artificial gauge fields in optical lattice experiments, or yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. This is the first program we propose for the following model. Yeah. So we have a Hamiltonian which lives on the triangular lattice. You have nearest neighbor interactions, which are Heisenberg interactions. You have second nearest neighbor interactions, and you again have this scalar chirality interaction living on the triangle. Yeah? So now this is what you see here is the phase diagram that we propose for this model. Yeah? So on the x-axis you can see a scan of J2, so a second nearest neighbor coupling, and on the y-axis you can see J chi, like this coupling with the chiral term. And J1 is always set to 1. So what we find, first of all, is three magnetic orderings. So first of all, this 120 degree in the L order, down at the bottom left. So this was actually known by this Bernou et al. Exact immunization study. On the right-hand side, we proposed this stripy order that was also known before. So this is an order where the spins align ferromagnetically in one direction and anti-ferromagnetically along the other two directions of the triangular lattice. And so on the upper right side, we propose that here a tetrahedral order is emerging. So this is a magnetic order where the spins align in a fashion that they form a regular tetrahedron. So this is a non-coplanar order. And what we propose is that actually in between these phases, there's this chiral spin liquid emerging. So why do we have evidence for this? Or why do we propose this? How did we get to this approximate phase diagram? So we did an exact ionization study. So we really scanned the system on an exact ionization cluster with 36 sites and computed a lot of ground state properties first. I forgot to say one thing. So actually the original proposal for the chiral spin liquid was here at the lower left region. And just for the nearest neighbor. So we see they were not too far off, actually, in this phase diagram. So I want to show you some properties of the ground state that we calculated, which gave like first indications that there might a chiral spin liquid be realized there. So first of all, what you can see here on the left-hand side are two spin structure factors, which somehow determine the magnetic order. Yeah? So as you can see on the top, it's the spin structure factor evaluated at the K point in the brilliant zone plotted. So the K point is the ordering vector for this 120 degree in the L order. So we see this order parameter is somehow big, where we've proposed this 120 degree in the L order. Second, we have this spin structure factor evaluated at M point. So this is indicative for both the stripy and the tetrahedrally ordered phase. And we also see that this structure factor somehow agrees with the region that we propose for the tetrahedral order, yeah? And the stripy order. And finally, what you see on the upper right side is that we computed the energy of a model chiral spin liquid wave function and compared it to the actual ground state energy that we get from exact diagonalization. So what you see here is the variational energy of this model chiral spin liquid wave function. So instead of this Laughlin wave function, we use what is called the Godzilla projected wave function. So it's something similar. It's also describing Chiral spin liquid, but it's easier to deal with it on a lattice. So we use this instead of this Laughlin wave function. Yeah. And so what you see is that actually the energy of this Chiral spin liquid is very low in the region where we have this spin disordered state from the structure factor. So that gives us the first hint. And then we looked into this chirality correlation operator. So this somehow measures the non-coplanar energy of the spins. And this is indicative for both the chiral spin liquid phase and the tetrahedral phase. And as you see, this this quantity is large in the order, in the region where we have the spin disordered phase, but also the region where we have the tetrahedral order. So you see that in this region between this magnetic orders, there is a low variational energy of this chiral spin liquid and this chirality correlations. So these are first hints that somehow a chiral spin liquid is realized here, but now we want a definite proof. And this is what we do. So we compute, what I'm showing you here is the many-body spectrum computed with exact linearization on 36 sites. And it's actually on a cut through the phase diagram at J chiral equal to 0.24. And what you see here on the right-hand side is the energy spectrum of this model. Yeah? So the ground state energy is always set to zero. And you have certain excitations. Yeah? And these excitations have certain quantum numbers. So these are the colors and the shapes of these symbols. And if the symbol is full, we have a singlet. And if the symbol is empty, we have a triplet. So what we see is that actually, in this region here, we have two low-lying singlet states. Yeah? And now what we claim is that these two low-lying singlet states constitute the two degenerate chiral spin liquid wave functions that are expected on the torus. Yeah? So these two states are expected to go. So the gap between these two states is expected to go to zero in the thermodynamic limit. So how do we show this? Well, we actually compare these two states, which we can actually compute with exact linearization, numerically exactly, with model chiral spin liquid wave functions. So we were actually able to construct two chiral spin liquid wave functions from this Godzilla projection on a torus. They are linearly independent and have about the same variational low energy. So they are supposed to describe these two topological partners that you would expect on a torus for a chiral spin liquid. And what we then did is we computed the overlap of these model chiral spin liquid wave functions with the exact numerical eigenvalues. And here are the results. So what we actually get is that we find overlaps of up to 0.92 with this exact ground state. Yeah? So remember, we just took this model chiral spin liquid wave function. This is just a plain wave function, no variational parameter in it. And we computed the overlaps with the ground state wave functions. And this overlaps of 0.92 is actually quite a remarkable number, I find, because first of all, the dimension of the Hilbert space we looked into is quite big. So you could say the dimension of the Hilbert space this system lives on is actually 2 to the power of 36, so which is about 68 billion. And this is quite a remarkable number then for this overlap. But furthermore, also something that comes into play is that actually this overlap is expected to go to zero in the thermodynamic limit due to something called the orthogonality catastrophe. So in this respect, I think these overlaps of 0.92 are quite remarkable. Yeah? And this is actually what proves that these two low-lying states constitute the chiral spin liquid in our phase diagram. So this was the chiral spin liquid on a triangular lattice. And we performed also a similar construction of the chiral spin liquids on the Kagome lattice, where the emergence was previously known.
So I got a question.
Yes, sure.
Just go back one slide.
Yeah.
So in the triangular lattice case, you have access, I guess you said you had 36 sites, so you've access to some smaller sites too, right? Can you do it like a sort of finite size scaling analysis of this overlap, including smaller sizes, and see that it's converging?
It's very tough. because actually the problem is there's so many phases in play in this in this geometry. So we need to stabilize this Néel order. We need to stabilize this tetrahedral order. So we need to have like a K point in this simulation sample. We need to have an M point. And so right. It should have a proper size, yeah?
So 36 is one of the smaller sizes, that gives you that point in case.
Yeah, somehow. I think there's also like a 21 side sample. Mm-hmm. But this is actually an odd number, yeah? So, you won't have a singlet ground state, yeah? This is kind of, yeah.
So what you could do... This is the only size that you can access that... You can do this overlap analysis with.
We did it on 28 as well. Mm-hmm. So the numbers were even higher, but we did not really dare to use this data because in this cluster, some of the Néel order cannot the 120 degree Néel order cannot be stabilized. So we somehow think that the physics is somehow shifted and not really correctly given. Yeah.
This is 24 sides.
36. Yeah. There's also a possibility to do it on 48, but that's a bit costly. So yeah. Okay.
Alright.
Okay. Okay. So it's a similar construction on this Kagome chiral spin liquid. And as proposed by Messier et al., we see that these overlaps are very high on this critical line between this Q equals zero and this Q-walk order. Yeah? So what we find here is an overlap of 0.8, so a bit smaller than in the triangular case. But if we add a further scalar chirality term of, for example, J chiral equal to 0.3, we will also get overlaps of 0.95, yeah? Which is quite a remarkable number. And so last of all, I want to speak about also a project I've been involved in, which is a collaboration between several people, also with Frederik Miller and Pierre Natov from APFL Lausanne. So we proposed the emergence of a chiral spin liquid in SUN fermionic mod insulators. So instead of with Heisenberg spins, we take SUN spins. And we investigated also a model on a triangular lattice where we have this permutation operator acting on neighboring sides and the three-side permutation operator acting on the triangles. And by new numerical techniques, we were able to diagonalize quite big system sizes also for big N. So this is numerical techniques developed by Pierre Natov and Frederik Miller. And also in these systems, we could show the emergence of the chiral spin liquid for phase for n equals 3 up to 9. Yes. So we did several things in this project. So first of all, we computed the variational energies of the Scatzwiller-projected chiral spin liquid wave functions and compared it to the actual ground state energies. Yeah. So this is what you can see here on the right-hand side. So on the right-hand side, on the x-axis, you see a scan through the parameter space. And on the y-axis, you can see the energy. And what we compare is the dots. So the dots are the actual ground state energy from exact diagonalization. So the empty symbols. And the lines are the variational energies of this chiral spin liquid wave function. So what we see is, if we increase n, this variational energy of the chiral spin liquid wave functions becomes very good. And that's why we propose that actually in this region, which is somehow orange here, we propose a chiral spin liquid. So, but not only did we compute the variational energies, we also computed overlaps for small n, for n equals 3 and 4 again. We find overlaps of 0.9 in this chiral spin liquid phase. And we explicitly also, something very nice, we explicitly computed the edge states on the sample with open boundary conditions. And there were some predictions on the edge states, how the edge spectrum might look like, and it was actually completely fulfilled. So if you're interested, I would have supplementary slides on this, but I think I'm going to skip it for the moment. Yeah? So with this, I think I've talked enough about this chiral spin liquid wave functions. In the end, I just want to talk a bit briefly about the numerics and our numerical method. namely exact diagonalization. Yeah. So it's actually quite a straightforward method. Yeah. So you just the goal it aims it as is just diagonalizing the Hamiltonian. So it's quite straightforward. You choose a basis for the Hilbert space. You build up the Hamiltonian matrix, and you diagonalize it. And so why doesn't everyone do it? So the problem is that, of course, you have the exponential scaling in the system size, and you're only limited to small system sizes. Yeah. But actually, what can now be done is you can go up to 48 spin 1/2 particles today. So this is actually a calculation we did in this project on the triangular lattice. We were not interested in this Tuquas region down here, so this region between the Nell state and the Stripey state. And we wanted somehow to solve this riddle, what is this, the nature of this phase down here? So what we did is actually simulations with 48 spins, and we simulated energy spectra at this point here. And so this were quite kind of large simulations, so the Hilbert space of this naively would be 2 to the power of 48. And so this is quite a huge matrix, and you cannot really fit it on a supercomputer. Yeah? So how still did we do this computations? So there's actually two key ingredients. You have to use a lot of symmetries, and you have to use the symmetries in the system quite efficiently. And by this, you can actually reduce the Hilbert space dimension quite drastically. Yeah? So actually in this system, we think we reduce the Hilbert space dimension by a factor 3,000 or something by using the symmetries. But if you reduce the Hilbert space dimension by a factor 3,000, you're still stuck with a very big matrix. So if you go back, we see if you reduce it by a factor 3,000, we're still stuck with a matrix that's 10 to the power of 11. But this actually can be done on modern supercomputers, and you somehow need a good MPI parallelization, which we implemented. And for this, we had to solve like several load balancing problems. And we nowadays randomly distribute the Hilbert space among these MPI processes. And we were also able to show that this has a good scaling behavior up to several thousand cores. Huh?
Sorry, question.
Yes? So
are you doing full diagonalization or Lanczos?
Ah, okay. I forgot to say that. Of course, Lanczos, yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah. So so basically, you do a...
Are you storing the Lanczos vectors when you do this, or are they in memory?
Yeah, only the Lanczos vectors. No matrix. Yeah.
But I'm just for these huge system sizes. Are the Lanczos vectors are in memory, and the matrix is on disk or something?
No, so we have a function that computes matrix times vector while only storing the vector. So the matrix is computed every time, recomputed every time.
Yeah.
So it's not stored. No. Exactly. No. Yeah. So okay, and yeah, I just want to show you why we think that these calculations actually work and are correct, because it's quite big system sizes. So we have some benchmark problems. We actually, the first thing we did, we tried like a 48-byte square Heisenberg antiferromagnet. We computed the ground state energy up to 12 digits. And of course, this is a calculation you should rather do with quantum Monte Carlo. So we can check it with quantum Monte Carlo, where it is very easy to get some digits of this number, and was actually okay. Then we ran another benchmark on this 48-side Kagome Heisenberg antiferromagnet, also computed ground state energy. And we checked this actually with a specialized ED code by Andreas he had developed before. And also here the results agreed. And yeah, as I told you, we simulated some spots in this J1, J2 model in the triangular lattice, also on 48 sides. And yeah, currently we are just trying to compute the ground state energy of this 50-side square lattice Heisenberg antiferromagnet, and then compare it to this quantum Monte Carlo prediction for the ground state energy. So yeah, with this, I think I would like to come to an end and let's conclude. So actually, what have we been talking about? So we introduced the fraction quantum Hall effect and topological order in it. And I somehow tried to introduce you where these chiral spin liquids come from, why they are interesting. I told you about that the Skyway spindle could have been proposed in 1987, but it like really took until 2014 until some realistic, more or less realistic models could be found that realized the Skyway spindle could state. I told you that now we know that these relatively simple models can stabilize the Skyway spindle could phase, and that, yeah, hopefully experiments can discover this exciting and novel kind of physics soon. So, yeah, with this, I would like to thank you for your attention.
Thank you.
I have a question.
Yes.
Can I? Okay. So, yeah. There is also Dzerzhinsky-Maria interaction. So,
yes.
Will Dzerzhinsky-Maria help to stabilize this kind of spin liquid, or it will try to destroy it? So, what is the role of Dzerzhinsky-Maria?
Ah, okay. Ah, that's a good question. I think there's a recent proposal where they propose if you add a slight Dzerzhinsky-Maria interaction to the Heisenberg nearest neighbor model on the Kagome, they propose that actually a Kagome spin liquid might be emerging. But I have to admit, so that's quite recent. So I think that's some weeks ago where they proposed it. And I'm not sure how fixed this evidence is. So I have to read it again. So I'm not 100% sure. Yeah.
So you didn't check the role of Dzerzhinsky-Maria for your model?
No, we didn't yet, no. No.
But experimentally, it is known that the DM interaction can actually induce an order. Experimentally, it is known that the DM interaction can induce an order instead of a current spin liquid. It can destabilize the current spin liquid and induce a Q4 to zero order if you add the DM interaction.
Okay. I think there's actually, until now, not really an experimental realization of this physics. So I think there might be, but it's actually not proven. So how do you prove that something is a Kairos spin liquid in an experiment? So I think this is quite a non-trivial task to do, actually. And I think even theoreticians should think about how to really propose experiments that could unambiguously show that such a phase is realized here.
But Habermas-Smith actually showed like a spin liquid phase in experiments. It shows a spin or excitation in Habermas-Smith. So is there a proof that it might host a chiral spin liquid phase?
Okay. Sorry. I didn't fully understand acoustically. It's somehow a bit difficult.
So can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah. I was saying that in Habermas-Smithite.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So it shows a spin-off excitation in the experiment.
Yes.
So is there a proof that maybe it might realize a Kairos spin liquid phase, maybe in the experiment?
In Habermas-Smithite?
Yeah.
Okay. I think there's no proof until now that something like this is realized, and I wouldn't even say it's likely that a Kairos spin liquid is realized. Might be, but I'm not sure whether it's likely. You know?
Okay.
So this is actually, this Kagome anti-ferromagnet is a highly complicated problem, and I think there's a lot of phases surrounding it. And what we are actually proposing is not that the Heisenberg anti-ferromagnet is a Kairos spin liquid, but that if you tune some parameters away from it, a Kairos spin liquid might be emerging. But I think different perturbations to this Heisenberg anti-ferromagnet might lead to very different physics, actually. So I cannot really predict whether this Herbert-Smithite crystal really shows chiral spin liquid physics. Yeah, I'm not sure about it.
Okay.
So, yeah. So, yeah, thanks for the question.
Questions? Can I look at this last slide of your first part with the overlap, 95% overlap for the chiral spin liquid for, I think it was a K in my labs?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You said that's remarkable, but I don't have anything to compare that to in my mind. So, like, how do you quantify whether or not that overlap, what's the threshold for that overlap giving you correspondence between the two states, for example? How do you benchmark that?
Yeah, so that's actually a tricky question. Yeah, you're right. So actually what you would like to do is somehow have a scaling on finite size, of course. But yeah, this is actually not so easy to do with exact initialization, admittedly. Yeah.
You have a counterexample for the same. Do you have a counterexample for the same system sizes for other states? You know, where it's not remarkably good.
We like also for certain systems we actually tried for the triangular lattice we tried a Dirac spin liquid.
Uh-huh.
And this Anderson RVB, nearest neighbor spin liquid. And so in all of these cases, the overlaps were really not good in no case. So this Anderson RVB liquid is not good at all. This Dirac spin liquid is also not really good. So they give like really low overlaps actually. Yeah?
Like what kind of number are you talking about?
0.1.
Oh yeah.
So it's somehow finite size and yeah, it's difficult, I think. Yeah. Of course you're right. Yeah, you would like to have this finite size scaling and have this everything done properly. But I think that the systems are really hard to solve and I think such overlaps are actually kind of remarkable, yeah, on these huge Hilbert spaces. So. Yeah, but you're right. Actually, we would like to have like really a finite size scaling behavior of this. So that would be probably better. But it's really tough to do, yeah, because we're limited to the small system sizes.
Okay. All right. I guess if there's nothing else, we'll let you go get breakfast. Thanks again.
Thanks a lot. Thank you.